All right, it's Chris Ryan from Tell the Damn Story, and we are at the Deadly Ink Writers Conference in Central Jersey, and I am here with Art Taylor, who's both a college creative writing professor and an author himself. Hi, Art, how you doing?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I appreciate this.
Well, we appreciate having you here. Can we talk about your teaching a little bit? What do you teach?
I teach at George Mason University. That's in Northern Virginia, Fairfax, Virginia, right outside of D.C. I teach a variety of courses, creative writing workshops, both in fiction and in creative nonfiction. And then I teach literature classes primarily focused in crime fiction. I've taught a Sherlock Holmes class before. I've taught one five killer crime novels. So a little bit of mystery in all those, and been very popular classes.
Fantastic. I will, full disclosure, I will tell you that we do the podcast. I do it with a friend of mine, Alex Simmons, the creator of Blackjack. But he also is the writer of a play called Sherlock Holmes in the Hands of Othello.
Oh, nice.
And it's been produced fairly regularly over the last several years. So it might be something that I'll have to send you a copy of.
I'll look forward to seeing it.
Good stuff. All right, so speaking of writing.
Okay.
Let's talk, and we're going to get back to the classes a little bit when we talk about how to write. You've written a book called On the Road. Oh, sorry, we have to go before that. Before that,
okay,
you have a track record with a certain magazine.
Yeah, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Started with your childhood experience trying to sell magazines, right?
Right, yes. One of those fundraisers for... your middle school, junior high school it was at the time, and they had us go door to door trying to sell some magazines. So I was like, okay,
how'd you do that?
I did really badly. I think I may have sold my parents something that they were already subscribing to, something like that. But I did subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine myself as I was looking through all the magazines. I was like, that caught my eye. I love mysteries already. I was reading Nancy Drew, The Three Investigators, and sure. So it was kind of my first introduction to adult mysteries. I was 10, 11 years old.
What was the impact of Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine on you?
Well, you know, at the time it was just fun. You know, I got it and I felt like this was a whole new world of mystery. But it's interesting now, going back and rereading the writers now that I read then, like Hugh Pentecost, Stanley Allen, Ed Hoke, who obviously was in every issue of Ellery Queen at that time, and to see the ways in which I'm certainly not putting myself in their level, but I recognize that some of the things that I do in my writing, apparently I learned just from like having read those things as a youth. It just got into my system somehow, and I'm echoing those things myself in my own writing. Didn't necessarily model myself on that at the time, but
you can't help but absorb, right?
Exactly. You absorb it.
And it's kind of feeding the muse, and then it comes out in a certain way.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. But that was my love of short stories. You know, it's like short story was what I read, not exclusively, but there's something about that that has always stayed with me. I valued that, and that has sort of helped me to write short stories as well.
And where have some of those short stories shown up?
You know, I've had work in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. I was in they just started Black Cat Mystery Magazine as a new one. I had a story in the debut issue of that.
Currently?
Yep. Cool. That was about, last fall, I guess it was. And I've been in several anthologies as well. Sisters in Crime, local chapter Sisters in Crime puts out anthologies. I've contributed to those recently. Other anthologies out there, just really wherever will take me.
Now, Ellery Queen, you started in the
Department of First Stories.
Famous launching pad for many writers.
You know, at the time, I didn't recognize it. I mean, I was happy to be in there. I sent a story in. They called up and said, "Have you been published before?" And that conversation, I was eligible and put me in there. Recently, Ellery Queen celebrated its 75th anniversary, and as part of that year-long celebration, great historian of mystery Marvin Lackman published a piece on the Department of First Stories. It was only reading that I realized that Richard Link, William Link,
right?
And Richard Levinson had appeared there. Stanley Allen, David Morrell, who wrote Rambo, his first publication was in the same series. And so I'm looking back over this long tradition of Ellery Queen having
that Asian restaurant.
long tradition of distinguished names who haven't appeared there. And I was like, whoa, I'm in good company. If only I can live up to, you know, someday live up to
well,
what they've achieved.
There's a nice pat on the back for you with the current issue or the upcoming issue, correct?
Yeah, the July-August issue of Ellery Queen. I've had my name on the cover before, which was like a milestone in itself. Right. But this, the new one arrived, and there are four names on the cover, and mine's on the top. And so it's like, wow, how did I do that? And what's interesting is Peter Lovesey, who just last year won Grand Master at Mystery Writers of America, mm-hmm. he's third on the list.
Well,
so I'm like, I'm going to give him a hard time when I see him. I'll be like, yeah.
If he keeps working,
If only, you know.
come on, always got to improve.
Exactly.
So let's move to what I started to mention
right.
before was your book, On the Road with Del and Louise, A Novel in Stories.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So first, it's got some honors, right? Yes?
It was very fortunate with the attention that some folks in the mystery community gave it. It won the Agatha Award for Best First Novel. It was also nominated for both the Anthony Award for Best First and the McCavity Award for Best First. I did not win either of those, but just being in that company at all was a thrill. So it's an odd book. The novel and stories, it is not a traditionally structured mystery novel.
So you use odd, I would use unique.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Because I think that this subtitle, A Novel in Stories, is fascinating.
Oh.
Tell us about it.
I'm a short story writer primarily. The first of the stories that is in the book is, okay, I'll back up a second, give you the structure and then the background. It is six stories, all featuring the title characters, Del and Louise. Del is a small-time crook. Louise is his girlfriend and the narrator of the stories. And Del is trying to go straight. So the first story, which is called Rearview Mirror, is about a one final heist at an art gallery in Taos, New Mexico. And then he's going to go straight. He's has earned a degree, and he's going to try to go into business. And I wrote that story not ever thinking that these characters had anything beyond this. It is a complete story. It's published in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I wonder what happens next for these two after the events of this mm-hmm. story. And so I ended up tinkering with a second story. And then as I was working on that, I started thinking about their longer journey. So so the novel has these six stories, each of which has its own sort of character. And I try to play with a couple of things, one with tone. The other with, place, obviously, is a road trip story, but also with these subgenres of mystery. So we've got, if we look at the adventures they have, there's the art gallery robbery in Taos, New Mexico. There is a real estate scam in Victorville, California. There is a wine heist or attempted wine heist in Napa Valley. There is a hold up at a wedding chapel in Las Vegas. You see where, you know, we're going. We got different things there. But the one in Napa Valley, for example, is sort of a funny story in many ways. It's a caper tale. But by the time we get to South Dakota, in the winter in South Dakota,
Deadlands.
It was in all the oil and the fracking industry
sure.
You know, this was like an economic boom going on, and Del gets involved with that. But that story is dark. Domestic expense edging toward noir.
Right.
And by the time we reach the final story in this, our small-time crooks have become detectives or amateur detectives in the final story, which is a more traditionally paced detective tale.
Right.
So I'm playing with tone, and that was very satisfying to me to sort of like, you know, stretch some muscles in different directions with each story, but try to hold it all together with one narrative arc, which is this couple. Where are they going? What does their future hold? And how does their past continue to creep up on them, catch up with them?
It's interesting that you mentioned in the first story, you know, Del is thinking that he's going to go straight.
Right.
And through the process of these different stories, he does, but not in the way he's intended.
Not at all. There are times when he feels like he's going to get pulled back in, times when he's voluntarily pulled back in, times when he's like... And one of the things they struggle with, talk about the past, one of the things that Louise especially struggles with is this larger idea, not of fate, not strictly of karma, but the sense that what you do defines defines who you are. And, you know, so is their future in some way defined by what they've done in the past that they can't escape? And that's one of the things is grappling with as well, not just how to make money in this moment. That's part of it. But also, like, you know, we live in this world. We have responsibilities to one another. We have responsibilities to ourselves. And who's the person we want to be? So there's, I'm not going to.
Aristotle, you are what you do most often.
Right, yeah. I don't want to be too existential about it, but that's kind of part of what connects all the stories together, even as each of them has its own identity.
So to talk for a second about your process in doing this book.
Sure.
I do want to get back to your academic process.
Yep.
But in once you recognize that there was more for you to, you know, these two characters were not leaving you.
And right.
They were calling to you to write more. Right.
Right.
Did you write each one organically, not knowing where it's going, or did you have an end point for where you wanted to leave them at the end of this collection?
Sure. Good question. You know, when I wrote the first story, I had no clue that anything was going to come beyond that. And it actually took several years before I started really thinking about it and working toward that next one. Once that happened, about the same time that a publisher approached me and said, we like your work. Do you have a manuscript for us to consider? And I said, I don't, but I do have these characters. And so it was talking to them and having somebody interested in the longer story, as well as my percolating on additional stories, that kind of accelerated the whole process. So all of a sudden I was focused. I did know where I wanted them to end up at the end. In terms of this road trip journey around the U.S., and that is in Louise's home state, my own home state of North Carolina. So I knew that destination. What was going to happen to them along the way was still something I needed to figure out, and that was part of pacing that longer journey. What's interesting is, having written the first story without any sense of anything beyond, the seeds for things that were going to happen in the last story, I found by coming back to the first one. So it was like, you know, without planning it, I kind of listening to my own work and seeing where it was going to take me. And that was a revelation to me too.
It, you know, I find it's about doing the work. Mm-hmm. And then that will, you can't expect the rewards, but they'll be there for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Hopefully, yeah.
My first novel was City of the Woe, and I had these two detectives and I was surprised to see a couple, not many, but a couple of the reviews saying, I wish we knew more about these two before.
Yeah.
And I had written two short stories. One wound up in Crime and Suspense, mm-hmm. they didn't exist anymore, and the other one in Hardboiled, the Hardboiled from back then. There's another Hardboiled now.
Okay.
So I had those, and I said, well, if I add to those a couple more stories,
sure,
I can do a prequel. But where does it start and where does it end?
Right, yeah.
So I started thinking of it as season one, like an HBO season one, right? So the first one only has one of the characters. And the second story is them meeting.
Okay.
And it's based on my brother's police. I come from family cops. But it was some crazy story he told. Great place to meet. But I knew where it was going at the end.
Yep.
They had to be in emotional position to go on that journey of City of Woe. So it was fascinating to see,
right,
you know, what I could do and all that sort of stuff. So like you're saying, you do the work and then you find the seeds for future.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you write? Are you a morning person, afternoon, evening? What do you got to do?
I write very messily. You know, I've tried at times in the past to be a person who writes a certain number of words a day. The old Graham Greene, write 500 words a day and you're going to, or to write a certain number of hours a day. And it doesn't really work for me. In part because of, talking about teaching, you know, during the school year, you know, the teaching schedule, the prep, the grading seems to take precedence. I can't always fit in the time with that. And also we have my wife and I have a 6-year-old son who we take parenting very seriously. So, but he is one of the reasons why I've learned what my process is now. You know,
but
watching
when he's awake, you can't say I'm writing.
That's right. Yeah, that's hard to do. Right. But also when I watched him, you know, when he was about 10 months, learned to walk, and And he struggled to take that first step, and then, you know, to get a second step. And I watched him, and he worked hard at it. And, like, one step was important, and that second step was important, and he eventually got where he's going. So I try to at least check in on my work every day if I can, even if it's not, if, you know, some days I'm writing several pages, a scene, whatever. Other days it's just making a note, making a line, making some, jotting something down. Somehow you'll get where you're going.
I always have the phone for that little notepad.
Oh, yeah.
And index cards. Yep. I prefer index cards because then you can get up before everyone is up and, you know, nice cup of tea and the floor.
Like,
and
spread them out.
Spread them all out, right? Yeah. All right, so are you a planner or a, you're not quite even a pantser. You seem almost like Jason Pollock. You know, you write a scene, you're not sure where it goes, right?
Yeah, I do.
Jason Pollock, School of Writing.
Yeah. So it's, I kind of just feel my way through. I get an idea, and it sort of goes from there. So it is, you know, to go back to paintings, it's the idea of, you know, I sketch a little bit, can erase some, can then fill something in. I don't always start writing in the beginning of a story, but eventually it kind of comes together. So it's
jigsaw puzzle?
A little bit of a jigsaw puzzle.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
And it's only until the end that it all comes into place.
Do you believe in rewrite?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's where most of it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, revision is where it all works.
I was at a screenwriters boot camp.
Okay.
The one thing I remember, God bless them, I had to give credit where it's due, was the secret to writing is rewriting.
Yes.
And I believe that. Bring it to my heart.
Yeah.
I still believe that. Are you, do you find that your academic experience informs your writing?
It does.
Do you practice what you preach, or do you learn more by teaching the kids?
Well, you know,
or adults. I'm sorry, they're college.
They are. Yes. it's true. You know, partly seeing their enthusiasm about their work, you know, translates into my enthusiasm. I don't know that I could always do the things that I assign them to do on deadline. You know, they have to work really quickly on things. But, you know, talking to them about how to shape character, about how to sharpen prose, about plot points, reminds me of things to look for in my own writing. And so it keeps me on my game. And thinking about, you know, the structure of a short story sort of academically, by which I mean stretching back to think about the history of the short story and developments of it, you know, has given me a broader perspective on the form itself. And so I think that all that contributes to, you know, to my writing on a day-to-day basis.
I was in your workshop yesterday, and you repeatedly referenced a couple of fiction, I guess you'd say, how-to books.
Right.
Could you give our listeners one or two recommendations?
Sure. And there's actually one that I didn't talk about yesterday that I would recommend pretty highly, which
we'll
is
take that.
Yeah, Madison Smart Bell. Narrative design is one that I actually use in my own classrooms, and I love that book because he's got a mix of like published well-known writers, and also students. Manuscripts from his own student workshops, and he takes and analyzes those and looks at how the structure works and does a line-by-line analysis of here's what's happening at this line, here's what's happening here, what is going on there, in ways that you can see how a story is put together. So I think it's really good. I mentioned also Janet Burroway's writing fiction, which I think is a favorite too. But that's a more conventional textbook that you see in a lot of classrooms, but you can also have one that might not find its way in a college classroom, like Dwight Swain's Techniques of a Selling Writer, which is terrific, and he had great success. And so we're seeing somebody who was a master of the form talking about what he's you know, how he works and how he thinks about structure. And I think that those those three together could be really good.
Two more questions, if you
don't mind.
Absolutely,
yep.
On the road, is there going to be a follow-up? Are we going to see more? What's next in writing for you?
Yeah, you know, I've had a couple of people ask about, you know, what's next for these characters, and it may be something I come to down the road, either in a short story, another short story for them, or possibly in another book. I'm not working on that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I am working on this being a novel in stories, I would call this one a more traditional novel, though I don't think it's traditional in all ways. It is a story about an all-boys boarding school, about a murder that happens there, and about two kids that are trying to investigate it, kind of paired against the story 25 years later of going back to the reunion at that school, and one of the characters, one of the boys who was investigating, dealing with in the present day some of the legacy of what had happened a quarter century before.
Fantastic. Now, where can listeners who are interested in Art Taylor material, where can they find On the Road?
Okay, it is available, you know, Amazon probably the easiest place to get it. It was published a couple of years ago. I don't know that you'll find it in bookstores right now, but
if you have an independent bookstore, go there and order it.
If you have an independent bookstore, you can order it, which I was going to say. You know, One More Page Books is our local bookstore down in Northern Virginia, one of my favorites, and they're my go-to place to get things.
Gotta support the indies.
And in terms of reading some of my short fiction, you can go to my website, arttaylorwriter.com, and check it out. I have a couple stories that are linked there. One of my stories right now was up for the Agatha Award earlier this year, and is actually up for the Anthony McCavity as well, and that is available in full on my website, so you can read it right now.
Excellent. Thank you for your time, and looking forward to seeing more of your writing.
Oh, thank you for having me on here, and good luck with your own.
Thank you. Take care.
Yep.